Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Hello there, my friend. Great show with Dr. Coe and Dr. Weaver today, talking about your eye health. Tim Linnefeld will talk FSU sports with me here in the first hour, and I've got Leela Shuffler talking about the Daddy-Daughter Dance, their 11th annual. And, of course, our lovely Miriam Dady with another guest in the Business Spotlight. Stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office. And by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
If Santa missed something on your list, get it now at Truck and Car Concepts New Year's Sale. Save hundreds of dollars on items throughout the store. Save $60 on a keyless entry system. Now only $299.95. Most vehicles, or a complete bed protection package with bed liner, bed caps, and tailgate cap, only $299.95.
Hi, I'm Joe Doty.
Don't take chances. Our professional installers do it right the first time.
Truck and Car Concepts New Year's Sale on Mahan Drive across from Kraft Nissan. Call 656-8800. 656-8800.
So here we are again on this lovely Saturday at the end of the first month of 2016. Remarkable to think that way as we march. No, wait a minute. We can't say march forward because it isn't. February starts on Monday. And with that, we say goodbye to January of 2016. Hope you got at least some of your resolutions enacted. Right? So you've decided that you're going to work out more, eat less, or maybe you're going to eat more and work out less. I don't really care. But whatever your purpose in life may be, I certainly wish you well in pursuing those interests. We have done so here with several interests that we're pursuing. Our annual Tallahassee Food Challenge is getting ready to launch here in February. That's kind of cool. We are now celebrating the conclusion of our sixth season. So we begin season seven in the month of February with Tallahassee Talks. We've been on the air now 6 years and counting. Well, and so those of you who've joined us of late, or for those of you who are longtime listeners, I would say in any case, welcome. Thank you for enduring with me and enduring me, but at the same time having provided for so many people the opportunity to have conversation with the folks in this town that make such tremendous contributions, and that's really our downbeat here. I mean, we're celebrating Tallahassee in one very cool story at a time, very inspiring people who work very hard in various ways to make this the town that it is. And it appears that it's all having a pretty positive effect, I would think, both economically and culturally, perhaps in terms of our arts and entertainment, our technologies. Even the quality of life at large, I mean, the installation of parks and trails and, of course, all that God has given us in the way of the natural wonders of this region, the rivers and seashore and all that it brings us, the meadows and the hills and valleys. I mean, it's just a great place to raise a family and to live your life, work, live, and play, huh? And so there you go. That's what we do. We bring people to the mic who are part of that whole mix. We've got a couple of wonderful folks in line for you today with Dr. Coe and Dr. Weaver. These two people who are eye specialists. We're going to learn about their work over there at Eye Associates and learn from them what are some of the latest advances in eye health. Optical health, we'd say, I guess, optometry and ophthalmology. We are all familiar now with LASIK surgery and the remarkable advancements that have been made available to those with ocular difficulties. Because of the kinds of technologies that come to bear, there are also other advances in the way of medical treatment. And we're going to find out from Drs. Coe and Weaver about that. We have as well, of course, our good friend Tim Linnefelt with another edition of the Linnefelt Sports Report, talking about FSU baseball just now around the corner, and all kinds of cool things going on with Florida State University. They just announced their football schedule for 2016. We'll find out about that from Tim. He'll be with me here shortly in this first hour of the show. And Miriam Dady has another guest in the business spotlight. We're going to find out who this person is and what they do and how cool it is to see so many aspiring and entrepreneurial sort of folks who are bringing to Tallahassee the kinds of contributions that account for a lot of the economic growth. And in that regard, I'll say, it seems to me that the dust-up between the Economic Development Council and the Chamber of Commerce that some of you have noticed, I find that most people don't know and don't care, which is disturbing at another level, but because at stake is about $90 million worth of tax money. That is to say, your money, my money, and as to how those dollars are going to be spent encouraging, developing new business opportunities, right? So it's for the first time, this kind of money being earmarked specifically for economic development. You know, well, whenever you get any kind of money involved, of course, then the question is who gets to decide how that money is going to be spent. And I suspect that that is at the core of how this whole breach began to develop over time. You know, and from my editorial point of view, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have people who are running the most powerful businesses in town also responsible for deciding who gets to be a part of this community and encouraging those to come in and compete for those same dollars. Seems to me there could be a conflict of interest there. Be happy to have that conversation with any who would care to engage me. But the fact remains that there has been this breakup. And honestly, I think it's probably for the best. I think there's a lot of things that you're going to see breaking up because you can't stay the same if you're going to grow, right? You have to be willing to make changes. Domey Station is a great example of that. And we had in the news earlier this week the fact that Florida is slated to increase in population, Leon County right there in that same mix, sizably over the next 5 to 10 years. The population projections are substantial. So that's good news, bad news, because with increase in population comes an increase demand for services, even things like how many more restaurants we're going to need, and traffic lanes. And by the way, slow down, please. Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of time available yet to get from here to there. And, you know, running through red lights and honking because you're not jumping through the intersection as soon as the light changes. We got to calm down here, folks. Too much of that going on. But aside from my traffic concerns, I'll say that the larger, more pressing issues really have to do with the thrust of where this town is going economically and culturally. We've seen the city commission vote on this noise ordinance. We see them now extend the closing curfew to 4 a.m. So, I mean, in that regard, I think we have seen a bit of loosening, some progress there. I still don't get the whole point about the noise ordinance. I think we need to make more noise, but that's okay as long as we can still have a good time in the process. What else was going on this week? Well, of course, we had the observance on Thursday, as it turns out, the 30th year or anniversary year of the Challenger disaster And the Challenger Learning Center was hosting then this commemorative occasion on Thursday this last week. And Gerald Inslee did a nice job writing an article there about the whole Challenger history and the experience and its meaning. If you haven't had a chance to do so, you might want to go back, and it's on YouTube. You can pull up President Reagan's address that he delivered that evening of the tragic accident when the Challenger mission met with disaster. Well, folks, we are here at that moment when we're going to take just a quick break. I've got Miriam Dady here standing by with her guest, and you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Stay with me.
Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widen Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widen's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best, like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widen is known for taking care of business. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Changing the face of talk radio in Tallahassee. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Time now for this week's Business Spotlight with Miriam Dady, brought to you by PushTheEnvelope.biz.
I'm Miriam Dady. Welcome to Tallahassee Business Spotlight. I have a guest that's not quite business-oriented, but definitely gets down to business. Melissa Bruner is here with FSU Women's Basketball. I am a huge fan, Melissa. You know I am. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Miriam. It's a pleasure. And I majored in business in college, so I guess maybe technically we can say this is still a business
spotlight. See, that's why I invited you on Business Spotlight. Thank you for pointing that out. Talk to me a little bit about the women's schedule this year. Where are we in the midst of it all?
Well, women's basketball is here in Tallahassee. We are just getting ACC play rolling, yeah, and we are excited, off to a great start so far, ranked 14th in the country, and I think we have a great product to sell, and we would love to have the community of Tallahassee come out and support the women's team. I think it's one of the best shows in town, and it's a deal to come out, and we've got some really cool promotions coming up here in the next few weeks.
What's coming up?
Well, our next game at home will be on Sunday, January 31st, and that is going to be a Faith and Family Day. Mm-hmm. So that's an opportunity for folks in their local churches or community groups to come out and get discounted tickets as well. Those are $3 tickets for Faith and Family Day.
And that's on a Sunday.
That's on a Sunday afternoon. Cool. It's a 2 o'clock game. We will be playing Virginia Tech that afternoon. And we also have pet adoption going on that day as well. We've partnered with the local Humane Society, and they will be bringing some pets out, so you can come check out some great basketball and also maybe go home with a cat or dog or another animal that the Humane Society has brought out.
Don't tempt me. That sounds good.
And then the following Sunday, we've got Clemson here at home. That's again a Sunday, February the 7th. It's at 2 o'clock. That's going to be our Samaritan's Feet game. We're going to partner with another charitable organization to try to help raise awareness and put some shoes on the feet of kids all around the world. We're actually going to do a shoe distribution here in Tallahassee the week prior to that. We'll have some footage of that, and then Coach Sue will coach barefoot that game, and you'll have a chance to see that and support that organization as well as support women's basketball. That's also a daddy-daughter game. All these promotions you can find on Seminoles.com. If you click on Seminoles.com on your computer or on your mobile device, you can check out all these promotions.
Samaritan's Feet is such a cool organization, too. And I don't want anybody to get the wrong impression. All of you do not have to come barefoot. Just the coaches. The coaches are going to be without shoes. Our girls will have shoes on, I hope.
They absolutely will. All the players will have shoes, and the fans can please wear your shoes. No need to come barefoot, especially if it's not very warm outside. And feel free to wear your shoes, but you can donate shoes if you would like to. And there's not, there'll be opportunities within the game to donate to Samaritan's Feet as well to help
and it's
put shoes on.
It's just as simple as texting.
It is, absolutely, and we'll have all those details for you at the game, but you got to come out to the game.
That's it. Okay.
I think we've got a really strong group of returners from last year. We had the most successful season we've ever had last season, and we've continued to build on that. The theme this year is Band Together, and again, we've banded together with our community, and we love the support that the local businesses in Tallahassee provide us, as well as our awesome fan base.
Well, it seems like it's Rebound Together, because we are taking the ball every time it's thrown up in the air, we come down with it.
Very observant. You are an avid basketball fan. We know that. But I don't know if your listeners know that. But you're absolutely right. We are one of the top rebounding teams in the country. I think currently we're either fourth or fifth in the nation in rebounding. We lead the ACC in rebounding. It's just something that Coach Sue has put an emphasis on, and we really feel like defense and rebounding is what wins us basketball games. That doesn't mean we don't like to get out and run and score.
Yeah.
But we feel like defense and rebounding is really what makes us be a championship-caliber team. And obviously, that's what we're striving for, is ACC championships and playing in national championships, and so far so good this season.
Oh yeah, and speaking of scoring and rebounding, what did Shekayla do the other day?
32 points nine rebounds or something like that. Gack is a double-double machine.
We've
got some outstanding players. I think we're a fun team to watch. Maybe I'm a little biased, but it's a great product. And again, you can get tickets dirt cheap, and it's not too early to start thinking about season tickets for next year too. Season tickets start at $25 for the entire season. That's 15 to 17 games, depending on the schedule. I mean, what is that? My math says it's less than a couple dollars, a game. It's a great show, and you're entertained. We've got some outstanding halftime performers. The Seminole Sound, our band is amazing. It's a great environment. It's certainly well worth your time to come down to the Tucker Center and check it out.
And it's such a great thing for families to do together.
Definitely.
I mean, you're talking about the daddy-daughter thing. What a blast that is for fathers and little girls to get to do together, but really for everybody. And it's, you can't go to the movies. You could go to two movies for the price of season tickets.
Yeah, it really is. It's we've got, oftentimes there's face painting stations, balloon artists, photo booths. There's a lot of other things going on in addition to some great basketball on the floor. So even if, a dad's listening out there and he's like, well, my daughter doesn't really like basketball, you'd be amazed at what a great time they will have watching the cheerleaders, listening to the band, having some popcorn. Again, there's so much going on at the games, not to mention some great basketball for the dad to enjoy, and hopefully his daughter will grow in her appreciation for some basketball as well. I know sometimes little girls don't grow up from the very beginning thinking that they can be basketball stars, but we hope to maybe inspire a few of those young girls in Tallahassee when their dads bring them out.
Exactly. And how can people find you again?
Seminoles.com is the best way to do that. That's the FSU athletics website, so Seminoles.com is the best way to go. There's links to women's basketball. There's links to tickets. You can buy your tickets right there online. There's the promotions that we talked about are all listed there if you go to the ticket website, and you can sign up to get some discounted tickets with some of those promotions.
I really cannot encourage you enough to do exactly what Melissa suggests. Get on Seminoles.com, get your tickets, or just show up and buy a ticket and walk in the door, because we're going to win you over. We have a lot of good basketball to play before springtime, before March Madness. And I'd love to see everybody come out to the Tucker Center and just fill it up for Coach Sue and the girls. Melissa, thanks for being here.
Miriam, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
It is a blast. And thank you for joining us for Tallahassee Business Spotlight. I'm Miriam Dady.
In 1788, Robert Burns wrote a poem about the coming of the new year and set the lyrics to an old Scottish tune. The little song became quite popular as the words recalled the days gone by. In 1929, Canadian bandleader Guy Lombardo popularized the song through his annual New Year's Eve radio and TV broadcasts, making it his trademark. This New Year's Eve, millions across the world will gather in celebration and at the stroke of midnight join in singing Auld Lang Syne. Wishing you all the best in the new year and reminding you, drive safely and never drink and drive. From Glass Pro Shop, Auto Glass Replacement, and more, 575-7403. And Truck and Car Concepts on Mahan Drive, call 656-8800. And from the law firm of Thompson, Crawford & Smiley, 386-5777.
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So here we are back from the hiatus of the sporting world, in which our dear friend Tim Linnefeld, I don't know, what have you been doing in the last several weeks? You've had nothing.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far.
Really?
No. Believe it or not, here and there. No, it's a busy time on my website, Seminoles.com, our website, Seminoles.com. No, it's the spring sports nice are in plug. Full swing. Men's basketball, I've been on the road. I went to Miami.
That's true.
Went to Louisville. Okay, I've been doing some stuff.
See, I'm so Peach Bowl oriented.
Yeah.
I'm very myopic in that way.
I don't even remember the Peach Bowl.
I mean, it's so far behind.
Who played in that? No, I'm just kidding. But no, men's basketball is in full swing. National Signing Day with Florida State is coming up. And the football schedule was released earlier this week. That's really exciting. We know exactly when and where we're going to be throughout our fall.
We don't know why, but we know where.
Well, you know, nobody's perfect.
Why are we playing them? Okay, well,
sure.
Whatever.
Sure.
And in that regard, too, let's not leave out our ladies.
No, that's right. The women's basketball team has kind of had a, after maybe taking some time to find itself, you might say, early on in the season, has really come on strong.
16-4 overall.
Pretty jazzy.
You know, and old Sue over there just making it happen.
No, they're plugging along.
They do have some very talented players.
That helps. You know? No, they do. They have two things you have to have. They have a really good guard in Leticia Romero and a really good forward in Adut Bolgak. And if you have really good players in your backcourt and your frontcourt, the odds are you have a pretty decent team, and they certainly do.
And they're playing, let's see, tomorrow afternoon. They are home, and they are playing, is it Virginia?
Virginia Tech, I think.
No, Virginia Tech. And that starts at 2:00 over there at Donald L. Tucker Center.
That's right.
So that's a cool thing to do on a Sunday afternoon. Go over and watch women's basketball.
Yeah, you know, a week between your conference championships and the Super Bowl. They have a really good team. They were mere seconds from the Final Four last year. Lost in a pretty heartbreaking fashion. And then they're kind of, you know, back in that mix again and hoping to make a run at it. So. No, it's a fun way to spend the day, for sure.
When you look at Florida State athletics in general, and of course so much of what goes on in this town is tied in with that in one way or another, it's a sort of agrarian thing. I mean, I really think of it that way, that, you know, the season comes and goes, and this is the time of year when you plant, and this is the time of year when, you know, you cultivate or you harvest, and then you... So we're coming into the spring of the year with men's baseball having started practice this week, right?
Yeah, started on Friday.
What do you see happening with our men in – they're not in stripes, are they? I was going
to
say men in stripes.
You know what? They used to have like a pinstripe uniform, but I don't think they do anymore. Yeah. I think they got rid of that one. Garnet's kind of a tough color to pull off in pinstripes. You really got to – you know, black, maybe navy blue, and that's about it. But anyway, you know, expectations, as always, are pretty high. I think most of the national polls, and baseball, there's like a million polls, and none of them are really more respected than the others. They're all just kind of, you know, whichever one your team is ranked higher in is the one you prescribe to.
Yeah.
But they're all, Florida State's hovering between about number 15, number 20 in those polls. So maybe just outside of the upper echelon, but, you know, among those teams that at this point in the season could certainly make a run into it. So, it's a pretty senior-heavy team, but it's also a team that has some holes to fill. The big one, of course, being DJ Stewart, the left fielder, who was a big-time home run hitter, went on to become a first-round pick of the Baltimore Orioles. So he's gone. And so I think one of the big questions for this team is, you know, where is the power going to come from? Who's going to hit the home runs? But a guy to keep an eye on, if you're interested, is a freshman pitcher named Cole Sands. He'll be in his first year. He's from right here in Tallahassee, Florida, went to North Florida Christian School.
Cool.
So they expect big things out of him. He was a guy who potentially could have gone to Major League Baseball right out of high school, was drafted, decided to come to Florida State, play here, throws really hard. And if things go well for Florida State, he could be a really key part of the pitching rotation both this year and moving forward.
Yeah. When does that season begin?
February. I think February 19th might be the first game. It's always like the second or third weekend in February.
Right, right. When we think of how athletics influences not only the, we'll say the local economy, it influences the way we think. I observe people a lot of times think in terms of the time of year they're in relation to Florida State athletics, or in relation to what their kids are doing, if they're turning out for soccer or for Little League, right, in the spring of the year. I think it tends to move us away from stuff that's a bit more sedentary, given the season of the year, and we're out there playing around and stuff. When you look at some of the newer athletic developments with FSU sports, FSU athletics, and I'm thinking of things like beach volleyball. I guess they call it sand.
Well, it was sand volleyball. Now it's beach volleyball.
Oh, they changed it back.
They spent, I think, 4 years telling everybody sand volleyball, and now it's beach. Go figure.
Well, they gave up.
Yeah. Makes more sense, doesn't it?
To say sand. No, it's beach volleyball.
Well, you know, but it's tough because there technically is no beach. There is sand, but there isn't a beach most of the time. Sometimes there's a beach, but not when they play at home. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
It's a marketing decision.
Yeah.
But in that regard, then you have things like Ultimate, and you have not the least of which, and this is certainly not a newbie by any stretch, the golf team over there. So, and we've got several golfers that have made the big time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And we've got these emerging, I'll call them, athletics in the way of volleyball and in the way of Ultimate, which for
Ultimate, not to cast any aspersion, but Ultimate Frisbee is a club team. It's not an official scholarship NCAA sport. It's
not part of some.
But it certainly is competitive and part of the culture.
What I was pointing to there is the possibility of that coming about, because at one time, volleyball wasn't on that list either.
Sure.
You know, so thanks for clarifying. The point is, Ultimate is an emerging idea.
And for people at home, we're talking about Ultimate Frisbee.
Right.
Not the Ultimate Warrior or anything like that.
Well, at least at this point, right?
Sure.
But I would like to see Ironclad Warriors out
there
on an intramural field. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Throwing a maze around, you know. No, I'm talking about those things that at this point might seem a bit novel, but they are emerging and they become more and more a part of everyday life for us. I mean, I'm throwing this in your path because a lot of times we talk about the well-established, very familiar sorts of things, football, baseball, basketball. But then you have these sort of emerging parts of, and I want to tie that back to how Tallahassee is changing, because I think we're looking at some of that happening at a level where the general population has more interest in those kinds of things for themselves, and it might actually turn out to be something that we would support as fans if Florida State were, you know, hosting.
I think a good example of that, of what you're trying to get at, might be to look at the rise of the women's soccer program at Florida State. And I think that coincides with the popularity of soccer in America as well. But you know, you're talking about a program that really is only about 20 years old, which is pretty young for a major college sports program, and kind of, you know, sort of, I guess that it was sort of off the radar for a long time, especially in the mid 90s, early 2000s. Then you get a coach who is really good at what he does, recruits really well. You start competing at a national level, and now you're a situation where, you know, they get about 1,000 people, maybe more, at their home games, and they have a really rabid following. I went up there; they played for the national title. They were in the Final Four a couple months ago in December, and they had, you know, traveling fan support. And that game was in North Carolina, and you got people coming from Tallahassee, either driving or flying, to come support them. So I thought that was, you know, it's pretty cool. And I think that's maybe a good example of, you know, what 20, 25 years ago was not considered to be a major sport.
Right.
And now it's kind of on its way.
And notice that Tallahassee has, for its part, been in a place where people go to compete. And when you talk to the local hotel owners and managers, if there's a tournament that is scheduled for Tallahassee, man, we get packed out.
Right.
There was the here a couple of months ago, I was talking with Beth Rodan, and she's telling me, yeah, all the hotels in town are booked this weekend. I'm like, what's that all about? This is like in late October, early November. Yeah, it's a high school athletics sporting tournament, and I don't even remember. I was track and field kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And Tallahassee was the destination for that. Well, how cool is that?
No, it definitely is. And, you know, when you think about it, it makes sense. There's a stop between, you know, Jacksonville and Pensacola and Orlando and Atlanta. Right. And, you know, there's a whole big swath of land there that you can draw people from in a central location.
And now we have the facilities to be able to support that kind of activity.
Sure.
We just need more hotels and conference centers.
Exactly.
We're going to take a quick break. We've got Tim Linnefelt with us, the Linnefelt Sports Report. We'll be back with more right after this.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Tim Linnefelt, the Linnefelt Sports Report, here part of our effort to try to highlight and underscore and celebrate what all makes Tallahassee a great place to be, and certainly our athletics, Florida State athletics particularly, a big part of that for this town. And we've talked a little bit about some of the edges of the conversation. Everything from ultimate frisbee to women's basketball and women's volleyball, I guess beach volleyball, sorry.
Well, soccer. And there's indoor volleyball as well, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then comes, we talked a little bit about baseball with them picking up. You have any, you mentioned this pitcher from North Florida Christian.
Mm-hmm.
You have some other players you think are going to really shine this year?
I think the one you got to keep an eye on is a guy named Ben DeLuzio. He's mm-hmm. a center fielder. He's from the Orlando area. If listeners are Florida State Athletics fans, they probably know his older sister Alexa was once a basketball player, played on his basketball team. So kind of a family pipeline there. And their dad, I think, played football too back a few years back. So kind of a cool little family story there. But anyway, he's a guy that you might find this interesting. When he was coming out of high school, he was drafted by the Miami Marlins, I think in the fourth round, which can be big money for a baseball player. I think I want to say he was offered in the millions. Turned it down to come play at Florida State, following his family's footsteps. And so kind of a pretty cool thing, right? I mean, can you imagine just, you know, what it takes to turn down that type of money? And I think it's really cool. I can't imagine myself doing it, but then again, you know, that's why he's, you know, he yeah. probably has that kind of drive and self-control that I certainly do not. But anyway, so I think he's a guy that has really is trying to find his stride. I think his freshman year was a bit of a frustration. He got hurt. I can't remember if he punctured his lung or bruised his lung or something. But he had one of those deals where he was chasing down a ball in center field and tripped and fell and just really hurt himself. But he has, I think, the potential to be a really strong leadoff player. He's fast as daylights. I know some of the coaches there when he was coming in said that he might have been the fastest guy they've ever seen. Now you're talking about a staff that coached Deion Sanders.
Yeah.
Now he's one of the fastest athletes ever. So when they say this guy might be the fastest they've ever had, that really says something. So I think he'll be a junior this year. You know, you go from being an underclassman where maybe some of the other players are leading the way. Well, now you know, you see that natural progression of you're a freshman, you're a sophomore, feeling yourself a little bit. Well, now you're an upperclassman, and in baseball, you know, given juniors are almost kind of the same way to seniors at times, because a lot of guys don't make it past their junior year, because that's when you're eligible to go to the draft again. So for to be a junior, to kind of maybe take ownership of this team, I think would be a really big deal for them to have him, Ben DeLuzio, be one of the key guys. So that's a guy I would keep an eye on.
And he's an outfielder?
Yes, center field.
Ben DeLuzio, okay.
Yep.
Lastly, we'll talk about Florida State football.
Okay.
Just because.
Sure.
With the release of the 2016 schedule this week, right?
Yeah.
What other happenings, what other newsy items are going on with FSU football?
That's really the big one. Schedule release is almost like, you know, Christmas in a way for a lot of fans. You make your plans on where you're going to be. And National Signing Day, where they get the final signatures from all the incoming freshmen, or the rest of the incoming freshmen. They had
And there have been a few commits lately that were eye-opening.
Yeah.
Well, eye-popping.
They're all eye-opening. And you know, this last week is kind of when it really, you know, it gets sort of rubber meets the road time, kids. Who maybe have a hard time making up their mind, which how could you not have a hard time making your mind? You know, they start to make up their minds and things get down to the nitty gritty. So it's definitely exciting. Recruiting is its own kind of subculture in college athletics. People really like to follow that kind of stuff. So that's really that. And then, you know, to follow up on the holidays, if the schedule release is Christmas, the National Signing Day is New Year's. So if you're a college football fan, especially in the off season, which we are now most certainly in, they're both nice little oases in the desert, so to speak.
With the kind of following that you do, you look at that recruiting activity. You see some commits that you're pretty happy about?
Yeah, no. The Florida State has recruited at a really, really high level under Jimbo Fisher. Most people will tell you. Assistant coaches both here and maybe folks who have been through here and are now at other schools that he is just an ace recruiter, does a fantastic job of, you know, going into a kid's house, meeting mom and dad, making them feel comfortable. And you know, it's funny because as sports fans, I think we kind of tend to look at players almost like, you know, I mean, we do. We look at like commodities or machines, whereas, you know, they're people. They are humans, and you know, a player's mom or dad wants to know, hey, I'm from 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, in some cases, from across the country away, I want to know that my son's going to be taken care of and that you're going to take care of. And a lot of times, it sounds kind of trite, but a lot of times a coach really is a parent away from home, or can be.
I think Bobby Bowden perfected that.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. He did. You bet he did. And Jimbo, I think, has done a really good job of that as well, and it certainly is reflected in some of the classes that they've brought in. And, you know, if you look back at some of the talent that has come here that he's recruited, first and foremost, of course, is, you know, a great example of that, I think, is Jameis Winston, who's from Alabama. It's really hard to get a really talented kid out of the state of Alabama. You got to get through Alabama and Auburn, and you can bet they both wanted him. And somehow or another, Jimbo Fisher convinced Jameis Winston to come to Florida State. So he is very, very good at that.
It's going to be an interesting opening to this whole year when you think about the fact that the stadium is currently under massive renovations.
It is.
Expansion. And
and as a result of that, they're only playing one home game in the first month of the season.
Well, I was about to say, including the spring game.
Yeah, that's not going to be there either.
Out of town.
Yeah.
You know, I guess Orlando.
Orlando, that's right.
And then the opener
is in Orlando. Well, we're going to be spending a lot of time in Orlando these next couple months.
So if you're a season ticket holder,
yeah,
you know, you're driving to Orlando and back. But the word on the street has been, people, you know, it's a 4-hour drive.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
Well, and I think also from an FSU perspective, you know, Florida State has a huge fan base in Orlando, in Tampa and the surrounding area. So I think a lot of the idea is thinking that you want people to make the drive and make a weekend out of it. And then, you know, that's certainly easy. Plenty of Tallahasseans go to Orlando for the weekend. Not a big deal at all.
Right.
But it's also an opportunity for some of those fans who live in Orlando, Tampa, and in Central Florida to not have to drive to Tallahassee for a weekend.
Yeah.
So that could be kind of a cool
thing, trade-off
too.
There. Yeah. When you think about the Peach Bowl, and I know it's old news and it's, you know, yesterday's lunch kind of feeling. Any thoughts there? Because you were there.
I was.
You were faithful in tweeting religiously, I thought, in keeping us all from losing our lunch while we watched Florida State, nicely, neatly dismantled in the process. What's your take on the whole outcome of that game?
It just kind of got away from them, I felt like. You know, I've seen some folks say afterward that maybe their motivation wasn't there, they didn't care about it, and I never bought that. I thought they did care. I thought maybe it's easy to say, yes, it's all in hindsight, right? But I think maybe we underestimated Houston a little bit. I underestimated Houston. I didn't think they were as good as they showed, but I thought they were really physical, especially on defense. I thought the game kind of turned when Sean McGuire got hurt, rolled his ankle later, learned that we had a break in his ankle. And so even when, you know, because Florida State was moving the ball pretty well at that point, picking up some big chunk plays. And even when he came back, which I thought gave the team a really big motivational boost to see him running out there. And gosh, never question how tough that kid is. But it was clear that he's playing on a broken ankle. You know, being able to step into your throws and deliver those throws is a big deal. And he just couldn't do it.
I'll tell you this. Those of us who were watching by way of television, the sportscaster who watched him play injured made several comments about the tenacity of that kid. And he said, you know, this is a guy who could have cut and run when he found out he wasn't the starting quarterback initially. But he didn't. And you've commented about that, the character of this guy. And then he's coming off the field, and Jimbo is laying into him. I'm just screaming at him.
Sure, sure, sure.
And the sportscaster was like, and then he's got to face Jimbo. You know,
sure.
Wow.
But you know what? I think that's kind of a rite of passage for Florida State's quarterbacks. He's been that way with literally everybody. You know, Christian Ponder was a first round pick. EJ Manuel, a first round pick. Of course, Jameis Winston, the number one overall pick.
Yeah.
He's been that way. You know, he is tough on those guys. And so I think if you're Sean McGuire or anybody, if he's not treating you that way, that's when you know you have something to worry about. Does that make sense?
Because he's sort of passed.
Right.
He's said, you know, why am I even wasting my time?
Exactly. If he's not laying into you, it's because he doesn't care. And you don't want that. Yeah. So I think, if anything, as much as it might not be fun in the moment, overall it's a good thing.
Yeah. The Tim Linnefelt Sports Report here, one of the wonderful things we love to do about this show. Tim, thanks for being with us.
As always.
A great contribution. We'll be looking forward to all of those things coming up in the way of Florida State athletics. And you are looking forward to another wonderful hour here with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. So stay with me.
The most talked about topics in town, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny here in the second hour of our little radio show that now is sporting 6 years of continued broadcasting. I am as enthusiastic as ever, maybe more so, Carl, because of the manner in which this lovely town of ours has considered its future. When it comes down to it, we've got some hurdles to overcome that were underscored last year with the release of Harvard University School of Business telling us that Leon County nationwide leads the nation in what was, referred to as income entrenchment, I think. What that means is that if you're born in Leon County, the chances of you ever making more money than your parents are the lowest. That is, the likelihood of that occurring is the lowest in the nation. So that talks about the fact that it's difficult for people to stay in county, we'll say, and achieve beyond what was the level of economic achievement for their parents. Yes, so that then is this business of going from one generation to the next, and we just don't see a whole lot of progress in terms of the, we'll call it, advancement of the population at large. And you have to ask yourself, well, how is that possible? I mean, here we have three major educational institutions, TCC, Florida State, FAMU, we have remarkably contributive businesses, some that are worldwide in their scope and their influence. Mainline, you know, one of the largest, if not the largest, reseller of Microsoft products. No, I beg your pardon. What do they sell, Carl? IBM. Yeah, IBM stuff. Okay, well, and then you've got Datamax, other large organizations that operate out of Tallahassee. What's the problem? Then you have those businesses that are perhaps not economic powerhouses, but are certainly world famous, none the least of which might be the Maglab. So all of this comes about to say that when you look at how income is distributed and how lifestyles are distributed, there is this kind of entrenchment then we find ourselves faced with. And I don't think that that is by design as such. I really think it's cultural. I really think that if you allow yourself to lapse into a kind of thinking that we inherit from one generation to the next, ultimately, and this is the whole point that Vincent Hunt is trying to make, is if you look at how educational models have developed and are then maintained, yes, there is inherent within every organization, I think, a tendency to want to maintain the way that that organization is structured. Maintenance is part of sustainability. I think at the same time, the openness to innovation, the shuffling of the deck, we'd say, or the idea that resources and ideas can be distributed across the population is vital to the growth of not only an organization, but a community, our society. Now, those places where we see resistance to change, oftentimes in our town, I think, comes up out of this sort of plantation way of doing business, that we own the land, the resources, the people, the ideas. It's all siloed, and after all, it's not our business as plantation owners to innovate. We're here to maintain. So we do a very good job of cranking it out, and we have an agrarian calendar now that is driving most of what we do. By the way, that's called Florida State football schedule. We're going to talk about that too. Further, we had Tim Linnefelt with us in the first hour talking about Florida State football and women's basketball. So that's top of the mind. But what it comes down to is, what are those activities that we engage in on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis that put us and put Tallahassee further out there, put us in a position to invite more people to be a part of that mix? And if you caught the news earlier in the week about our economic forecast, it's actually pretty rosy in terms of increasing population. Now, I mean, it's easy to say, well, you got more people, then there ought to be more jobs. Well, of course, there's a certain logic to that, but I would argue that having an increase in population alone is not the answer. What there has to be is an increase in awareness of different ideas, innovative ideas, different ways of educating, different ways of creating, different ways of entertaining, and even different sports and athletics and different ways of providing business opportunities. How about services that businesses render? How about those kinds of activities that involve families more and more directly? Whether it's recreational, educational, those are the things that you have to start looking at. How do we entertain ourselves? How do we care for our children? How do we grow our businesses? What kinds of local services do we rely on? Good example, how about where we go as business owners to have services provide us, provided us, or where we go to purchase the products and services that we need in order to maintain the businesses. Well, if you're always going out of market, you know, you've got a print job. Where are you sending that print job? Is it going to a local printing company? We got a bunch of them. I mean, there's Harvest and Gandy and the Printery. I mean, they're all around us. Rose Printing, where are you going for your printing? And if those opportunities that you seek are strictly dollar-based, well, then you're kind of missing the point, because not only do we have the opportunity to work locally, we have the opportunity to spend locally. As examples of things going on around town, I mean, we're talking cultural opportunities. Women's basketball comes to mind. We've got Florida State women's basketball playing tomorrow afternoon over there at the Civic Center, so that'll be cool, at Donald Tucker Civic Center. Women's basketball from 2 to 4. They're coming into the latter portion of their season. I got about a month left, but they're doing well. They're 16-4 overall. So way to go, Coach Simrau and FSU women's basketball. So that's a cool thing. You could do that tomorrow afternoon. And, of course, the ice skating is still going on out there at the center of Tallahassee. If you haven't checked this out, it's kind of fun. At least the people I saw out there skating. Don't ask me to get out there. No, thank you very much. I'll kill myself. But the folks I saw, they were having a blast. So there's ice skating going on, all kinds of cold weather stuff. Let's see. The annual art faculty exhibit is going on over there at FSU Museum of Fine Arts. And what else did I see here? Oh, yes, the J.S. Bach Cello Suites with Greg Sauer at St. John's Episcopal Church. That's coming up tomorrow afternoon, 1:30, over there at St. John's Episcopal. So lots of activities going on around town to encourage us all to enjoy this fair city and all the many people that make it such a cool place to be. We're going to continue here with more of Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
In 1788, Robert Burns wrote a poem about the coming of the new year and set the lyrics to an old Scottish tune. The little song became quite popular as the words recalled the days gone by. In 1929, Canadian bandleader Guy Lombardo popularized the song through his annual New Year's Eve radio and TV broadcasts, making it his trademark. This New Year's Eve, millions across the world will gather in celebration and at the stroke of midnight join in singing Auld Lang Syne. Wishing you all the best in the new year and reminding you, drive safely and never drink and drive. From Glass Pro Shop, Auto Glass Replacement, and more, 575-7403. And Truck and Car Concepts on Mahan Drive, call 656-8800. And from the law firm of Thompson, Crawford, and Smiley, 386-5777.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
We're back, and we're talking with Lila Shuffler about Rotary International and this upcoming daddy-daughter dance that she's going to tell us about. Let me tell you a little bit about Rotary International. It's an international service organization whose stated human rights purpose is to bring together business and professional leaders in order to provide humanitarian services and encourage high ethical standards in all vocations and to advance goodwill and peace around the world. It's a secular organization, but at the same time encompasses a number of very important principles that most of us embrace. As an organization, it is open to all people, regardless of race, color, creed, religion, gender, or political preference. Currently, there's nearly 34,000, a little over 34,000 members in Rotary worldwide. 1.2 million individuals called Rotarians have joined these clubs. I beg your pardon, I think I said that incorrectly. 34,000 member clubs, not members. So nearly 35,000 clubs worldwide, 1.2 million people involved in Rotary. And here we have one of those, 1.2 million, sitting here with us, Lila Shuffler. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
It's good to have you with us. You are I know that you're getting ready for this event, the daddy-daughter dance. And this is something you guys have done for a while now.
Right. We started 11 years ago. This will be number 11.
Wow.
Hard for us to believe.
Some of those daughters are now married and have daddies elsewhere. I mean, have the husbands who are daddies, huh?
Absolutely. Right. In fact, one year we had a dad that brought seven girls,
goodness,
his three daughters, and their four daughters.
Wow.
So he had multi-generational papa.
You know, and for an organization, any organization that can point to that sort of lineage, I guess you'd say, or staying power, you know, this ability to continue in providing not just an event, but then all the services that you guys offer. I know that this is a fundraiser for you.
It is.
How are those dollars used?
Well, many local organizations that we support, as well as international.
Yeah.
One of our primary biggies is the Rotary Youth Camp outside of Quincy that we put on every summer for disabled kids. And it costs a lot of money to put that on every year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's grown now to 3 weeks long. That's a big fundraiser. We've helped out with Jimbo Fisher's Fanconi Anemia. We do Peace Jam, which is an organization of clubs throughout the state and actually into all the way up into North Georgia. And the kids form clubs that put on projects to promote unity, acceptance, anti-bullying, and that sort of thing. And they work with Nobel Peace Laureates at FSU every year.
That perspective is really at the core, isn't it? Rotarians, in my experience, and I know a number of you, have that about them, I think. And they bring that to Rotary. I mean, they didn't learn it there. They really identify with the idea of giving your best, contributing where you can, and then maintaining this centered idea of high ethical standards, really giving everybody else the best opportunity you can.
Absolutely.
They're very contributive in that respect.
It's like, is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned?
Yeah.
Will it build goodwill and better friendships? And will it be beneficial?
Yeah, those
to
are
all
the
concerned?
Five rules.
Those
there.
Are like our
little
slogan, tests of everything we do and
say. Is this
say.
A good idea? Is this a good action?
And is it going to be good for everyone?
Right.
And that's
right.
The beauty about the daddy-daughter dance is it's a win-win for everybody because it's open to the public and all ages, all backgrounds, all from little bitty, we give a prize to the youngest daughter. The youngest we've ever had was 3 weeks old.
Oh my.
And we don't ask how old the oldest daughter is, but we do ask how old the oldest dad.
There we go. Okay.
So we've had in the 80s. So
Where's this going to be this year?
It's going to be at the Moon, and it is every year, and is always the first Saturday in February.
Okay.
This year is February 6th.
Okay.
At the Moon. From 6 to 9:30.
Okay.
And tickets can be purchased online at rotarydd.com. They can also be purchased at Sunny's restaurants here locally and at the Moon ticket office.
Neat. How much tickets?
They're $35 for a dad and $20 for a daughter, regardless of the age.
And tell us what's included in that evening. What's going to happen?
There's sparkles and balloons and we have John Summers of the Music Machine spinning tunes. Our major sponsor is Capital Regional Medical Center. We have aprons from Publix coming to provide pretty snacks and good food. Plus, we fill in with other foods.
So there are refreshments involved.
Yes.
Now, this definitely has me piqued. Now, I'm interested. I mean, I might have to talk to my daughter about coming with me.
Oh, I think you'd love it, regardless of the age. It's a time for dad to get out there and learn how to bust a move.
Yes. Well, I certainly could use some help in that regard, too. I'll bust something, no doubt. So there are a number of Rotary chapters, I guess, or clubs here in town. And this effort, the daddy-daughter dance, is part of the north side.
Tallahassee North Side
Rotary.
It's there's our major fundraiser.
There's sunrise and sunset and midday and afternoon. And there's several different Rotary clubs.
Correct.
Yours is the north side. I think there is actually a south side or?
There is. Ours meets at the Holiday Inn North.
Okay.
That's right there at I-10 and 27 North.
Okay.
And the Rotary clubs kind of space themselves around a town.
Yeah.
So that it's easy convenient. For people to meet for lunch.
At various meeting times and places.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that it's convenient. We would love for people to go online and look us up.
Okay.
We're just the initials, Rotary, R, C-O-T-N, Rotary Club of Tallahassee North, and .com. And it tells about our different endeavors worldwide as well as locally. And
wonderful.
When we meet and we target businesses primarily so that it's easy to get to us.
Very good. Rotary Northside, folks, that's it. And tell us the web address again for tickets. That's
the tickets is RotaryDDD, Daddy Daughter Dance, .com, RotaryDDD.com.
It's the Daddy Daughter Dance. It is coming up February 6th at the Moon. Tickets are on sale now. You should go. Bring your daughter, bring your dad, have a great time, and help these fine Rotarians do what they do.
A wonderful bonding experience for a father and daughter to make a tradition.
It sounds awesome. Lila, thank you for being our guest.
You're most welcome.
In 1788, Robert Burns wrote a poem about the coming of the new year and set the lyrics to an old Scottish tune. The little song became quite popular as the words recalled the days gone by. In 1929, Canadian bandleader Guy Lombardo popularized the song through his annual New Year's Eve radio and TV broadcasts, making it his trademark. This New Year's Eve, millions across the world will gather in celebration and at the stroke of midnight join in singing Auld Lang Syne. Wishing you all the best in the new year and reminding you, drive safely and never drink and drive. From Universal Collision with two locations in Tallahassee, 894-3600, Witten Glass, 222-5781. And from Sellers Tile on Capitol Circle Northeast, 656-8453.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Established in 1960, Eye Associates is the oldest and largest ophthalmic practice in Tallahassee and the surrounding area. It happens that Eye Associates is really a group of seven ophthalmologists and one optometrist, eight medical professionals who have specialties ranging from oculoplastic, corneal, and glaucoma. Each possessing a unique area of expertise. And by the way, if I mispronounce any of these, I'll be sure to come back and correct myself. So just hang on. Our doctors, the doctors at Eye Associates cover all of the ophthalmic subspecialties, which include board-certified, fellowship-trained, along with providing the most up-to-date technology for cataract surgery, premium implants, whatever that is, we're going to find out. Glaucoma, macular degeneration, which just sounds horrific. I mean, that I hate that. And other eye diseases and pediatric care. So with all of that having been said, we're going to talk with the very lovely Dr. Sarah Coe, who is our guest. How are you?
Hello. I'm good, thanks.
You look well.
Yeah,
life agrees with you, I can tell. You're happy. Good. But then there's Dr. Michael Warner, are you okay?
I think I'm hanging in there.
Okay, all right. Well, it happens that Dr. Warner is also our guest and also then affiliated with Associates. And these two young people have committed themselves to the task of helping us all see a little bit better. But as you've discovered in my description here of all that they do, that can get to be a bit challenging if we're talking about everything from cataract surgery to macular degeneration. So in the conversation here, we're going to get at some of these things, and we want to find out from you folks those things that you're doing and the things that are happening in this whole field of eye care and ophthalmology. Both of you have been in practice for some time, and having been a part of this whole group of physicians and personnel here at Eye Associates, what do you notice about the way in which an organization works like that? And let's talk about it in terms of the person who maybe has their individual practice, right? And maybe you're one of those people who at one time, you know, had your own office, right? And now you're part of this larger group of practitioners. How does that work for you?
I think I can speak to that because I believe I'm the one with experience in the past, whereas Dr. Koh, I believe this is her first experience. I was actually in private practice, and private practice a number of years ago as an individual provider, physician, was fairly easy. Let's say 10 years ago or so. Reimbursements from insurance companies were good. You could support adequate numbers of staff. Paper keeping and record keeping were generally simple. Government regulations were relatively simple. Nowadays, though, things have become increasingly, exponentially, I would say, more difficult. And for that reason, that is why I've sought out work with Eye Associates.
I see.
They have top to bottom, really strong personnel, administrative staff that are in place so that physicians can actually take care of the patient rather than have to take care of day-to-day details, billing, coding, regulations, compliance, and things like that.
And I can tell you, having spoken with a number of other medical practitioners in various fields, general medicine, internists, and such, Dr. Mignon is an example, that story is repeated. And it's pervasive. It has changed not only the manner in which your life then is different as a practitioner, it's changed how it is for us as patients who are seeking those services and what we have to do to get through that process just to get in front of you so you can help us. And you've described that well. I get this picture where here's this one person over here trying to practice medicine, in this case, providing eye care services. And then you have to have all of this infrastructure to make that happen in a practical way. You've got to have all the administrative, medical records processing, people who are watching out for the backside, meaning liability issues, and making sure the light bill gets paid, for that matter. With the involvement of the larger the more significant involvement of federal regulation. It's you mentioned the insurance part of that, and of course it's a hot topic. You said that it was easier then, we'll say 10 years ago, to get paid. How is that different now? Is it delayed? Is the payment date delayed? Is it that they pay less? Or both?
Both. Basically, reimbursements are less because I think the healthcare dollar is less. Even though the premiums increase, it's sort of interesting that the reimbursements to the physician has gone down. And it's also interesting that the largest, actually a very small percentage of the insurance premium actually goes to physicians. Most of it goes to hospitals who have a very strong lobby, as well as pharmaceutical suppliers, drug manufacturers. Reimbursements are delayed, and furthermore, they try and do anything they can to deny care or delay care because insurance companies make money on the float, which is basically the premium dollar sitting in their banks earning interest or invested in Wall Street or whatever.
Yeah.
So they make their money on the float,
and
if they pay too quickly, then there's really no float and they don't make their profit.
Yeah. Dr. Koh, with you involved more recently in this practice, tell us about what you do with Eye Associates.
Well, I do glaucoma and general ophthalmology. I just finished a glaucoma fellowship in England. And it's interesting to see the way the two systems function. And I think they both have their strengths. You know, like in England, you don't have to worry about paying your health bill. You just go, the NHS takes care of you, but you get what you get. Mm-hmm. You don't get to pick your doctor. Mm-hmm. And you may not even meet your surgeon until the day of your surgery, and you may never see them again. Mm-hmm. But here, we get to have a close relationship with our doctors, sometimes for a lifetime. And they're your confidant, mm-hmm. and your friend, and they help you. And I like to get to know my patients in every way, not just their eyes. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. it's not just the eyes, it's life. Mm-hmm. It's how do I remember to take my eye drops when mm-hmm. I'm rushing around and I can barely remember to pick up my kids up from school.
You've talked to my wife about this. Yeah, that's insightful. In that regard, you both, I'm hearing a lot of anxiety about wanting to do your best, wanting to give more, wanting your patients to be well served. Both of you have sought out this opportunity with Eye Associates, I think, from what I'm hearing, because it really makes it possible for you to do that, maybe in a more effective way to do that, even from one system, meaning your involvement as a fellow in England and now here. Do you find you have more time with your patients now?
Yeah, I'll tell you why I picked Eye Associates. I grew up in Tallahassee. I went to Lincoln. I absolutely...
Go Trojans.
That's right. Go Trojans.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love this town. Today I got to take care of a neighbor that lives just a few blocks down the street from where I grew up. Mm. I mean, it's wonderful taking care of your own community.
Okay, see, now that's preaching to the choir here because we have talked at length about, with our show, how, in fact... A lot of what we see happening in the last 5-10 years has to do with retaining this creative class of people, the folks who, like you, perhaps went to school here, or in your case, grew up here, and have chosen to make Tallahassee their home. Maybe they've gone away, but they're back. We're going to talk a little bit more about that and your personal involvement in the community. We have with us Dr. Coe and Dr. Warner. They are both in practice with Eye Associates of Tallahassee, and you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Stay with me.
In 1788, Robert Burns wrote a poem about the coming of the new year and set the lyrics to an old Scottish tune. The little song became quite popular as the words recalled the days gone by. In 1929, Canadian bandleader Guy Lombardo popularized the song through his annual New Year's Eve radio and TV broadcasts, making it his trademark. This New Year's Eve, millions across the world will gather in celebration and at the stroke of midnight join in singing Auld Lang Syne. Wishing you all the best in the...
Hello, brothers and sisters in Radio Land. This is blues guitarist Jerry Thigpen. Don't you move, because this is Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Dr. Coe and Dr. Warner, these very fine young people who have come to us by way of Eye Associates of Tallahassee, the oldest, largest ophthalmic practice in the area. And they are that particular organization we're talking about, Eye Associates, is reaching out to the community this year. In fact, I want to read this. This is an interesting set of ideas here. They're teaming up with multiple senior centers in the Tallahassee area to promote and educate healthy living and eye care awareness. Well, that's cool. And then they're working with optometrists in and around the Tallahassee area. Now, they have an optometrist as part of their medical group there, but they're pretty open-handed about their relationships with other practicing professionals, optometrists particularly. So they're working to make sure that they provide exceptional customer service. That's their downbeat. And we decided to have them come and talk to us because particularly when we talk about medical treatment in general, we got at this a little bit in our first portion of this conversation, the influence of and the changes in how insurance is paid, how medical providers then are subject to all sorts of burdens that, you know, 10, 15 years ago they didn't have to think about. It's become a challenge. And so with that, the next question I have is how it impacts the advancement of treatments, and particularly in the areas of plastic surgery. Dr. Werner, you provide that. Do you see the whole science of plastic surgery for those who need it, in your case, with eye plastic surgery, optical plastic surgery? Do you see those constraints having an impact on development of new ideas?
I think within the realm of functional plastic surgery, which is surgery that's done to make the function better. So if you have a droopy eyelid or a turned out eyelid or a tear duct blockage or a cancer that needs to be removed, I don't think there's been that much negative impact with regard to the current healthcare environment. And I think from a counterintuitive standpoint, I think there's actually been benefit to the cosmetic end of things that we do. So as reimbursements for the functional procedures decrease, a lot of physicians are looking towards cosmetic procedures to sort of make up for the lack of reimbursement in other areas. So there's been a lot of innovation with regard to neuromodulators like Botox. There's there for a number of years that was the only game in town. Now there's three different products available. Filler products like collagen was the original filler. Now we have a multitude of different materials available for wrinkles and whatnot. And then also there are a number of different laser procedures for skin rejuvenation that really may or may not have been available had it not been for the squeeze from insurance companies and Medicare.
So it's not all a bad scene.
So it's not all a bad scene.
With the work you do with glaucoma, Dr. Ko, you have made this your area of specialty. Do we see advancements there medically that make glaucoma more treatable or more predictable? Tell us about this whole area.
Yes, absolutely. Glaucoma is a tough disease. You know, 95% of people with good care will keep vision their whole lives, but there's still that 5%. And the other 95%, they may be on medications their whole life just to keep their good vision. And so a lot of work is being done to kind of intervene in glaucoma, stop it in its tracks, and hopefully give people more independence in their life.
Is it associated with a particular age group or gender?
Absolutely. It's people who are older have higher risk of glaucoma. People who have a family member with glaucoma are at 10 times greater risk. African Americans are at 4 times greater risk. So there's absolutely a genetic component, but it's also an aging disease. But there are new developments now. Like, for example, we're starting to do the eye stent. So it's an extra 5 minutes added on to cataract surgery.
Okay.
Because you can imagine if someone's older, they've developed a cataract, and they have glaucoma. It's a chance for us to address both at the same time with the same with what to the patient feels like the same procedure.
Right.
Just all at once. So
doing it all in one case.
That's
in regard to how that is provided then, is that, I hate to be I guess pragmatic about it, but in terms of coverage, does that impact how reimbursements are going to be made if I'm putting those two procedures together in one opportunity?
Yeah. So, you know, I think maybe because I'm younger, I'm more idealistic and maybe a little naive, but
well,
that's
you and me both, I'd say. Yeah.
The one thing I like about this practice is I leave the reimbursement stuff to the administrative people.
Yeah.
And I just make my decision based on what's best for that person.
Well, that underscores Dr. Werner's point earlier that, you know, that's why so many of you in this business of providing medical care of any kind have sought these opportunities. Because otherwise, how do you spend your day and then again your evening trying to work through all of that business? What do you find most hopeful, I guess, in the treatment of glaucoma? What are some of the bright stars on the horizon for you.
Yeah, so I did residency at Wilmer at Johns Hopkins. Mm. And one of the things they're working on there is a medication to hopefully stop the nerve damage that occurs in glaucoma. Oh. Now, that's still probably a decade down the pipeline. But, you know, my hope is that we find a cure for glaucoma and put me out of business.
But well, then you'll be working for Dr. Warner, maybe helping him do plastic surgeries. What is that really? Is that realistic that we could eradicate glaucoma entirely?
Oh, gosh.
You hope so.
You know, I mean, I think glaucoma is one of those diseases where we haven't had a lot of progress in decades. Mm. Macular degeneration has made huge strides. You know, cataract surgery is leaps and bounds from where it was when our parents or grandparents were having cataract surgery.
Right.
But glaucoma hasn't changed much.
Okay.
We've come up with some small advancements like the eye stent I told you about.
Right.
But there is definitely a lot of room.
Well, folks, I tell you this. It seems to me we're in good shape if we've got the two of you and your colleagues over there trying to make sure we don't all bump into each other after a while. And honestly, I think when it comes down to a comment that you made earlier, Dr. Coe, you were talking about loving to be in Tallahassee. There are a lot of folks who are saying that these days. It is, I think, reciprocal. I think that Tallahassee loves having professional people on hand who are as compassionate and as well informed and trained and committed as you both are. And it's been our pleasure to have you here with us. Thanks for being our guest.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, cool. Well, folks, you go on being cool. And if you need help with any of these sorts of things, if you need more information, you know where to go. Eye Associates in Tallahassee, our guests today, Dr. Coe and Dr. Warner. Our pleasure to have them with us and learn a little bit more about this whole, pardon the pun, murky business of ophthalmic. Is that how I say it? Ophthalmic care. I'm working on that. Oculoplastic, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got work to do, folks. But I appreciate your kind indulgence. Thanks for being a part of the show here today. We will be back again next Saturday. We're the production of Alcom Marketing and Advertising. Our executive producer is Carl Cerny. I'm Brian Cerny, inviting you to come back next Saturday morning right here at 93.3 FM on your dial. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.